This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
Where do I begin? So I currently am living in Texas. I have had trichotillomania for over a decade, I would say, since about seventh or eighth grade. So, and I'm 27 now, so it's been quite a while. But currently, I teach at a university and I'm trying my best to keep control of my urges as best as possible and not let it interfere with my academics or my teaching. And I can get into that in a little bit about kind of how I balance that, especially when there's like really strong urges. But yeah, essentially that's kind of where I'm at right now. Is I finished my psychology degree, my master's, and I've done a little bit of research on trichotillomania, but primarily it's a daily struggle, as many of you probably can relate to. It just makes it a little bit extra hard for me personally because I research it and I seem to know a lot about it. It kind of hurts my heart that I can't fix myself, quote unquote. So that's why I was super interested to come on this podcast and talk to you.
So where do you pull from?
So I'm an eyelash eyebrow puller. I currently don't have anything at all. Over the last, I don't know, 14, 12 years, however long it's been or so, I have gotten really good with covering it up with eyeliner. And I've tried so many different eyebrows, different brands, eyeshadows. I finally settled with one I swear by. But yeah, that's currently where I'm at now, is nothing on my face. But I've never pulled from my scalp. I've gotten close a couple of times, but it's never become a daily routine for me.
I too am an eyelash and eyebrow puller. I've started with the eyebrows. Where did you start with?
I started with my eyelashes. And it's weird because I remember it was so, so clear in my head. I remember being in eighth grade many, many years ago, and I was in the gym waiting for my school bus after school. And at the time, the only makeup I wore that I was allowed to wear was mascara. And I wore just super clumpy, typical 2008 eyelashes. And I recall waiting for the bus and pulling the mascara off of my eyes and taking eyelashes with that. And I remember thinking to myself, that's so, I just got an eyelash. And it was like my first memory of it. And I had a gap for weeks. And then it slowly progressed after that. And so initially I thought it was like a mascara trigger. But over time, as I started to learn more about it and more about myself, I know it's much deeper than that, but it seems to be one of the first things that triggered it for me for some reason.
I have a similar experience where I was like, oh my gosh, I have makeup in my backpack. And I try to put mascara on the bus and I go into the school bathroom and you already know what it looked like. And so there I was again, you know, pulling off the mascara. I don't know if that's exactly what started. I just don't think so. Cause I had already, when I started pulling the lashes, it's because the eyebrows were gone. So it just kind of naturally moved. But I remember that feeling of, oh my gosh, like I look silly. I have to fix this. And then it's coming out. The hairs are coming.
That is such, like, I'm getting emotional talking to you because I've never ever heard somebody say that out loud to me. I say it all the time to like my husband, but my therapist, but it's so crazy to hear that from somebody else. This is amazing. I'm so sorry. But like, I have goosebumps hearing somebody else talk about an experience that I have myself. It doesn't even seem real. Wow. Give me one second. So that's actually super interesting. I always wonder how people handle the makeup situation if they choose to do that. I know this is a disorder primarily women have, but I've always wondered, like, if there's a man who has no eyebrows, it's not as easy, to throw on eyeliner and eyebrows, perhaps. So, I totally understand what you're talking about, being in the mirror, and I have my emotional support makeup bag that never leaves my side, and I absolutely despise it. It is such a crutch, but as long as I can remember, I don't drive anywhere. I certainly don't go swimming or anything like that without emergency eyeliner and eyebrows. It's just a normal part of my day. If there's an emergency, I'm gonna have to put my eyebrows on before I go to the hospital if I can. It's a real problem. So, yeah, I completely relate to you in that way. Wow.
All it took was one day where you itched your eye and the makeup was smeared, and you'll never be without it again. I feel this. I had the same thing in my backpack, like because I used Sharpie. Like I would use any marker, and I'm like, I just have to be prepared. Put it on the mirror in the morning and throw it in the backpack because one itch and it's like I'm exposed now. Everyone's gonna know.
Right. Or like, you get stuck, touching your eyebrow. Like myself, I'm wearing, if you can't see me, if you're listening to this on the podcast, I have brown hair and I wear dark brown eyebrow makeup. And so if I'm ever finding myself rubbing my eyebrow, which I often do, especially the ends near the corner of my eyes where they get the worst triggered prickliness, I often find myself smudging my eyebrow makeup and it creates a dark brown black eye effect. And it's awful. It's happened to me so many times out at, the grocery store or at work, or someone, one of my students will come up to me and say, "Hey, your eyeliner or your eyebrow is a little bit too, smudged up here." One of my biggest, I'd say, embarrassments, unfortunately. The perception of other people is not kind.
When you do pull your eyelashes, for me, there's two different ways. I am either feeling it and then I'm alerted. I'm like, oh, that's the one. Or I'm looking in the mirror and I see one that I don't like. How do you pull? What is your ritual? What triggers you?
So for me, the timing of this interview was such an interesting time for me as well, because I went through a period of not pulling my eyelashes between the beginning of January and 3 or so weeks ago. I had full growth. Now, I haven't stopped pulling my eyebrows for many, many years, but that's another story. Somehow I was able to stop pulling for like 6 months or so. And then when summer hit and I wasn't teaching classes and I seemed to have a vacation of sorts, I pulled all my eyelashes out in like 1 or 2 days. And I didn't perceive stress, certainly not as much as I would during the school year. But it, even in recent weeks, I've had this for years. Like I said, I researched this. I still don't fully understand my triggers. And I'm like, how do I go 6 months being super busy at work and, doing this and that and not pulling. And then I'm sitting there watching a show, a movie, reading a book, and they're gone. It's so crazy. So I'd say they're unpredictable triggers, but texture is definitely a huge one. I had to be super careful in those 6 months. If I ever wore mascara, it had to be like non-synthetic. Basically, just it dyed my eyelashes a darker black. It didn't stiffen them up or anything, and that was the only kind I could use. But now, once the eyelashes are gone, the next trigger is definitely the individual prickly hairs. So, particularly the corners of my eyes, when I blink, I'm better at ignoring it if it's not in the corner. But if I can feel it, it's game over. And I never, ever, ever can just do one, because once I have to get the one out of the corner, then I'm like, well, I'm already in front of the mirror. That felt really good. I'm gonna continue the rest of them that I have on both eyelids. So there's so many triggers, but it seems to really be texture for me, even more so than stress.
When you pull them out, do you rub them on your lip or stick them on things?
No, so I don't eat or rub it on my lips, but sometimes If there's a lot of them, like a lot of individual prickly ones on my eyebrows or eyelashes, particularly eyelashes, because they're a little juicier than eyebrows. So funny that you like know what I'm talking about. This is amazing. I'll kind of collect them on my finger, but I don't have any oral fixations or anything. I just really like to see it on the tip of my finger, and then I'll be really sad when I like wipe them off. But sometimes if I have like maybe six or more, I'll collect them. And I just kind of, oh my, I did such a good job. And then proceed to extreme guilt. And then you're telling yourself, cool, I'm gonna restart.
You mentioned that you wipe them off. I blow them.
I've done that a
Like,
couple times.
it just feels like the natural next step. Just blow them away.
Yeah. I can't really recall. I think I just wipe it on my pants usually, which is unusual because it's kind of like a collector's item, but that's I kind of like that one better. I might start doing that. Maybe that's good luck.
I'll take it. I'll take it. So tell us your journey into becoming a researcher of trichotillomania.
Well, it's been a really long road. Like I said, I'm 27, but I started with getting my bachelor's degree in psychology. And at the time, the whole like I've had this since middle school. So my entire college career, I had trich. But I knew that I really wanted, my initial goal was to actually get a PhD, and I wanted to be a psychologist, a licensed psychologist in the state of Texas, and practice clinically with people who have trich and BFRBs. That's always been my life goal. I applied to a bunch of PhD programs. Sadly, after my undergrad, did not get accepted, even though I had some interviews. Then I decided, you know, like I just feel so deeply about this. I want to do something with, I can't waste this. So I ended up getting a master's degree with an emphasis in psychological research, and that's kind of where my research kicked off. It originated as a thesis for my master's, and then, you know, many years later finally published it. But during that time, it was such a juxtaposition for me because on one hand, I'm like, okay, I'm a master's student. I'm publishing this research. I feel like I'm doing something for the community, and then 5 o'clock hits, I go home from campus and I'm ripping all my eyelashes out. And then I'm telling myself, you don't know what you're doing. How could you be a researcher or a psychology professor and go home and not have this under control? And it's taken me many years of therapy, regular weekly therapy that I'm still in now, to realize that my personal struggles with trichotillomania and hair pulling are not indicative or reflective of my other skills and traits. I'm allowed to be intelligent. I'm allowed to be a researcher. I'm allowed to know a lot about trichotillomania and still have it. And it took me so long to realize that, particularly because growing up, I'll use my words carefully, but I was bullied, I will say, some of which was from my own parents. So my belief in myself was already very low. And then to go into the world, it kind of felt like a fake face I was wearing, like a mask, where everybody else thinks I'm smart and I'm so good at this. And then I go home and they don't know I'm actually terrible. So yeah, that's been my journey, especially with research, but coming to terms with not only being smart outside of your disorder, but being beautiful outside of your disorder. You don't have to have eyelashes to be pretty. And you know how many years it took me to realize that? And I still don't completely realize that. It's so hard, especially after having 6 months of eyelashes. And then you relapse, and then you're like, wow, like now I'm ugly too, which isn't true. But I've been told that I look like a chemo patient by my own parent. I've been gossiped about by my own family members who didn't think I could hear them on the phone. So it's just this constant struggle that I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with of, am I pretty? Am I worth anything? If I go home and pull my eyelashes out, that's the struggle for me.
And what's so tough is we're so little when we develop these disorders, for the most part, like the average age of onset. You know, we're little kids. And so even if the people around us weren't saying those things, we are already thinking them. Like we are already saying the worst things to ourselves And then the people that are supposed to love and support us, they're not helping. They're actually reinforcing the negative thoughts. And so it's like, well, wait a minute. That this is just the truth then, I guess. You know, and so like it takes many, many people into adulthood to try to actually change that mentality. The thoughts that you've spent years and years saying over and over, that becomes your truth. And then you realize, well, wait a minute. Well, I wouldn't say that to that person. Why do I keep saying it to me? But it's so hard. I mean, the physical changes are hard too, but the internal stuff is hard as well.
Exactly. And especially if somebody close to you or a parent or sibling or something says, "What's wrong with you? Why can't you stop?" Or if you're, God forbid, blamed in some way that's kind of backhanded, like, do you think wearing makeup to cover it up is actually making it worse? Are you making excuses for yourself? Heard that a lot from a parental figure as well. So, as you can imagine, it's been, you're so correct. It's just this constant battle inside my head. Already, I have extreme anxiety disorder. And so it's one of those things where you got to get outside your head or you're going to drive yourself crazy.
When you were presenting your research, and you said this was first for your thesis, so you have to talk to people about it. Did the people that you shared with, did they have any background knowledge of trichotillomania, or were you the first person to actually introduce it to them?
So for me, there's not very many published researchers in this field, and I really wish there were more. And I know that you know about this, which is why it's so cool to meet you. There's just not a lot of people in academia, unfortunately, especially not only researching it, but having it is so rare. So for me, finding a PhD program that had any type of emphasis in BFRBs was virtually impossible. I ended up not getting accepted into a PhD, sadly. That's sort of still a goal of mine, but I'm not sure if I'll be able to do it. But it was difficult to go to these symposiums and present research at seminars or talk to my colleagues and my professors and my cohort, other people in my class. And, their research for their thesis is, something that's much more commonplace or understood by the public. And then I'm talking about, the different types of people who pull their hair out. And it's not only, oh, I've never heard of that. Who would do that? I'm like telling people about my research, and then they go, is that a symptom of like schizophrenia? Like they couldn't believe that the disorder just is that could just exist without something being clinically significantly wrong with the person. Like it was so difficult for me to establish that. And even though I didn't reveal at first that I had trichotillomania, it was intentional because I wanted to hear what they said. I would wear false eyelashes or something where it wasn't obvious, and then I would hear them say something along the lines of crazy, and then I would step back and go, well, actually, I have trichotillomania, and just watch their face fall. So I know I shouldn't do that, but it's one of my favorite things to do is just to get people's initial reaction, how they really feel, and then say that I have it. And they're like, wait, you're a professor, or oh, you do this. I'm allowed to do that. Your perception of people who pull their hair out is they can't work, they can't exist. Okay, cool. Eye-opening.
And I feel like the media doesn't help either. You know, they're showing, I'm going to write a blog post about this, but every time they show someone with trich, they're always like a bad person or like crazy, and they're pulling out like a chunk of hair. It's so annoying. Have you seen trich represented in the media? And if so, what were your opinions on it?
So, other than like really the only legitimate thing I've seen is just within the research space, where like I've had journalists report on my research and write articles about it, which is super awesome. But I recall, I don't know what show it was. I want to say it was like My Strange Addiction or something like that. That notorious episode of her eating her hair, I believe it was. It was so many years ago I saw it. And it was just a really severe version of my reality. Not to say that that doesn't happen to people, but I feel like anytime I see it, it's like a Law and Order s episode. And the person who they make out to be the most mentally unwell is the one that has trichotillomania. It's never somebody of high status or somebody that is working a regular job that just has a family, it's very, very frustrating. Makes it harder to accept yourself for sure.
Did you know HabitAware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
So, for those listening, can you tell us a little bit about your research?
I can. This was a few years ago. I wrote my thesis and I had a really awesome advisor. So, generally speaking, like I said, there's just not a lot of research out there. So, what I wanted to do with my advisor was identify different types of people who had hair pulling disorder because I really wanted to know specifically what emotions they experienced and if the pulling behavior mediated those emotions. Essentially, we used data from a psychologist in Texas whose specialty is BFRBs, especially trichotillomania. So we used that data where people answered surveys about themselves before, during, and after pulling. So they would report negative and positive feelings if they were happy, stressed, all of that before, during, and after. And then ultimately, at the end of my paper, we established six different classes of different pulling behavior types. And it was really interesting. The first four classes were what we typically see clinically, especially in terms of feeling relief or feeling less anxiety, more increasing guilt, the things you would expect. But my fifth and sixth classes were either super, super emotional after pulling, or they didn't really feel emotion at all. And this is just grossly summarizing something I did a few years ago, but it was eye-opening in the way that we were able to separate them out and then say, okay, so if this person doesn't feel any emotional change after they pull their hair out, we should probably change their therapy, their clinical intervention compared to other people. There's some people who would benefit from habit reversal therapy or CBT, or there's a number of different therapies. And given these classes, we were able to propose, consider this therapy for these people. If this person feels this way after pulling or this way after pulling, maybe they benefit more with this than this group of people. Go figure. Basically, what we found is that not everyone who pulls their hair out is the same. Contrary to what some clinicians might think. So it's not something that you can go, oftentimes, like you said, it starts in childhood. So oftentimes, parents will see their child pulling out their hair, like my parents, and they'll take the child to a primary care doctor who may or may not even know what the disorder is. And that was my experience. Here's some serotonin. I know you're 16. I know I don't know a lot about this, but try this SSRI. That didn't help. So I wasn't until my late 20s doing therapeutic intervention, which is actually really sad to think about.
I remember in high school I was on a cocktail of like five different medicines, and they were just tweaking it. Let's up this dosage, lower this one. This one's going to keep you up all night, so this one will put you to sleep, and then this one's for your mood. And I look back and I go, oh my gosh, what was I? And I wanted to be on the medication because I was hoping that something would cure me. Like I really wanted it to be like what
Right.
would fix me, but oh my gosh, like my person did not. They were doing their best, but they did not know what they were doing because that is a
Nobody
crazy thing.
And that's not to speak poorly of medical professionals, because I know that there's great ones out there, but just from my experience, these general practitioners, they are likely not informed on the research. At bare minimum, they've heard of hair pulling disorder. But it makes me sad to think about how many, especially children and teenagers like ourselves, go into that environment and are just given medication or not even introduced to therapy. Now, the research has evolved a lot since I was a kid, so hopefully that's not as commonplace, but unfortunately, it does happen. I was on a cocktail as well. It kind of helps with my comorbidities. Maybe my daily anxiety medication helps me with my ability to handle work without having a mental breakdown. Sure, I have clinical diagnosed OCD. So sometimes I've noticed pulling my eyelashes out to prevent somebody from dying. That was a serious one. So having OCD is a whole discussion in itself with trichotillomania, in my opinion, because you're using pulling as a reinforcer to not make something bad happen in my case, which is a dangerous place to be in. If I don't pull this out, someone I love will die. That kind of OCD. So certainly in that case, maybe medicine's permitted, but I should try therapy.
Yeah, and there's a ton of comorbidity with trichotillomania, which also adds another layer of why it's so hard and complex to diagnose and treat. But when you just mentioned your OCD, how did you or how were you able to kind of tackle that mindset of, hey, if I don't do this, someone will die?
So my journey with OCD has been almost independent of my trichotillomania, just because it's so complicated. It's like having two super complicated disorders at once. And I feel so badly for people who experience OCD. But the actions that we take, the things that we force ourselves to do a certain number of times, or else, in my case, something very severe will happen, like I mentioned. I had to go through a lot of therapy to convince myself that the physical amount of knocks that I make on this lamp next to me does not correlate at all with whether or not I kill somebody. Like, it's that sort of mindset where you're so, I've done it since I was very, I've had OCD my entire life. And it's something that many of my family members have as well. Same with BFRBs. I have that in my family as well, skin picking and hair pulling. So it's it was difficult for me to go about my day. I went up and down the staircase a certain amount of times. Like, it was very, very taxing on my body. But when trichotillomania started to become part of the ritual, I knew that I really needed help because it was becoming very painful. And without getting too into detail, not triggering anyone, I would have, spots on my face from repetitive pulling, bleeding, things like that. I went to therapy. I was able to get a control on it. Certainly have it still. Certainly a daily struggle. But I started to pull from other areas too. And that's when I was just so perplexed with my brain to be this old in my 20s and not really know what's going on in my own head. That's scary.
How would you describe your relationship with your trichotillomania now versus when you were younger?
When I was younger, I didn't have support. I would venture to say at all. Now I've been with my husband for 11 years and he's like my day one, my best friend, absolute rock. They're the only two people in the world other than my mom, my dad, and the people that they've subsequently shared that information with. My husband and my friend are the only ones that know. So I still, this is the first time I've come out publicly with this information because I'm ready. But now I feel very empowered by it. Now I understand trichotillomania. I've gone through so much therapy. I've talked to people. And like, just generally speaking, I've gotten past the point, like, my brain is fully developed. I've gotten past the stage of like being bullied in high school, middle school. That doesn't affect me anymore. Now, if somebody were to come into my eyelashes, I'd say, something's wrong with you. What makes you feel comfortable saying that to me? You know what I mean? It's just, you're different when you're an adult and you have a career, and it's very different than a middle schooler. But when I was younger, yes, I did get picked on a lot in my own household and compared to things and people that I looked like and told that I needed to stop. What is wrong with me? And so I kind of was a recluse. I did not grow up in a good household at all. So all of those childhood traumas certainly did not help. So your question, how I felt as a child versus now, I feel much more empowered now, much more grounded in myself. And I have an ability now to understand that judgment that's passed on to me is reflective of other people, not me. Snaps.
A lot of people that I talk to are often scared to tell somebody that they're in a romantic relationship with. For you and your husband, was it something you shared right away? How was your experience?
Oh my goodness. Okay, such a good question. So I was about 16 when I started dating my now husband many, many years ago. It's been about 11 now. I recall it was almost a year before I told him, and the way that I told him was very, very complicated. It was just, we were long distance dating for 3 years before I finally moved to the state he was in. So we would FaceTime a lot, and so he didn't fully grasp what was happening. He never saw me pull. I didn't pull in front of him for probably 6 years. But I said, I have this thing. And I texted him, and he was like, you could tell me anything. You could tell me anything. And remember, at this point, I had the perception of my parents. And I was like, if I tell him this, he's going to think less of me and leave me. It was very, very hard for me. And so I said, I do this thing. That's how I explained it. I do this weird thing where I pull my eyelashes out. All right, cool, bye. Like, it was so scary. And he was like, that's it. And I'm telling you, we're married now. He's the one. He's so amazing. But that was like the first time that I've ever been validated in my body, myself, my trichotillomania. That's the first time I wasn't bullied. And I was like, okay, I really love you. And even now, my relationship with myself is so complex. He, for example, like I said many times during this interview, I went 6 months without pulling. And he was like, oh my gosh, you have a full set of eyelashes. This is great. And then a few weeks ago, when I pulled all of them out, he came home from work and I don't wear makeup around the house. I'm very comfortable not wearing eyebrows around him. And he looked at them. And I was crying my eyes out because a relapse is particularly difficult, even more so than just pulling daily. And he said, let's start again without even no judgment, nothing. It was chef's kiss. He's so supportive. And I know that is rare. I know that that's not something that a lot of people experience. And so, like, bless his heart for sure. I don't think that I would have been able to do this if it wasn't for him.
And it also helps when it's like you have someone in your corner, right? So like now that you are, you already did research about it, you're now being more open publicly about it. If anyone were to ever say anything to you, I got someone who loves me for me. Like, I don't care what your little comment says. Like, I'm loved over here. Like,
That's what my therapist says to me all the time is when she first said it, I don't think she like said it quite right. She said, your husband doesn't care how you look. She said that to me so many times. And I know she meant it genuinely. And she's so sweet. She saved my life in so many ways. But I was like, okay, I look like a dump truck.
Her wording might have been a little off, but yeah, the message still stands. The message stands.
Your self-perception is so mean. I am my own worst enemy. I'm my biggest bully.
What advice would you give someone who wants to start sharing their story?
I would say it really depends on the person, because for me, there's an element of being an adult and being out of the realm of, the high school age or even the college age where you're susceptible to peer influence and things like that. Now I don't have any of that. So it doesn't affect me like we've been talking about. So I can come do this interview and there's really no repercussions. If my job finds out, great. They already know that I do this because it's all over my profile. So I'm not in a place where I care, is what I'm trying to say. However, I would just consider your own heart first because it's a really big thing to talk about. And I've listened to some of the podcasts. When we started talking with each other, I've done a lot of looking into your profile and all the awesome people that you've met with. I've already followed a bunch of them. I love it. So I would just say, listen to your own heart. Like, you don't have to go out of your way. Maybe at first, reach out to somebody like you, like what I did when I just commented, and then you reached out to me. Maybe I could have messaged you, and then we could just talk, and I can decide. Maybe I'll do the podcast. But for me, getting to see you, beautiful, by the way. First time I've ever seen anybody with my disorder besides myself in the mirror. So even that could be somebody's first step. just saying, wow, this, like, I don't know if you have a TikTok, but I've seen your little Instagram reels. Just watching those, I just saw one, I think today or yesterday, and I showed my husband at the dinner table. And I was like, look, this is so relatable. He just laughs. So it's so crazy just getting to know you as an individual. Maybe that could be the first step for people.
Well, I'm flattered. Thank you. I'll take that. That's the best answer So, what advice would you give parents who have children with BFRBs?
I really want to put this out there. If there's anybody that's listening to this podcast that's a parent, and maybe you don't have trichotillomania, this is very real. I want you to take a second and don't be like the parent that I have, because it's very hurtful, especially at a young age, when your first reaction, just because it's different or misunderstood or new to you, to say, what's wrong with you? You look like you're a cancer patient, to somebody who's 12. That is so sick, and just, I can't even imagine. I can because I went through it, but I can't imagine what my life would have been like had I had parents who stepped up immediately and said, we're going to get you to a therapist, a psychologist, whatever, instead of, you look really sick. You should stop and go put makeup on because somebody's coming over. It's just, if you are a parent, particularly if you have young children, even middle school, high school, the things that you say right now are so critical. It has been over a decade and a half since I first had this issue pop up, and I still think about the way that my parents reacted. I still think about the phone calls that my parents had with grandparents and their friends in the living room when they didn't think I was listening, and I was sitting around the corner crying. To this day, they still don't know that. Oh my gosh, you, Macy started pulling her eyelashes out. I know. Can you believe that? I don't know what's wrong with her. That's a real conversation. Consider your child's feelings, please. I can't believe I have to say that, but I'm speaking from experience. If you don't understand the disorder, that is totally fine. This is not a super common disorder. It's not expected that you're an expert, and you don't have to be a published researcher like myself to have empathy for people. Please consider showing love and patience with your child and getting them to, if you must see a doctor, totally fine. It's your prerogative. You are their adult. Please see a clinician of some kind. Please consider looking into psychologists, therapists, whatever is comfortable for you. Consider it. Don't be your child's first bully. Don't teach them that it's okay to accept that, and don't teach them that they should expect that from people because of their disorder. Don't be your child's first bully. If you see that they're pulling their hair or picking their skin, eating their hair, whatever it might be, biting their nails till they bleed, they need your help. You are their protector. Get them help, and they will thank you decades from now. When they look back on it and they can say, thank you so much for being supportive. That was a great parenting move. That's all I have to say. It's a big problem in our community. I've heard so many awful stories, not just my own.